Welcome to Boston Confidential, Beantown's true crime podcast. Boston is a great city, but there's more to it than the Freedom Trail and Fenway Park. There's a startling underbelly to the city, and Boston Confidential will take you on a guided tour of the hub of the universe, Boston, Massachusetts. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Boston Confidential. My name's Barry McGuire, and I'm your host. I'm a 20-year private investigator on the streets of Boston, and I help run a company called Impact Due Diligence Investigations. If you need anything in terms of investigative services, feel free to contact me at Impact. If I can't help you personally, I'll certainly direct you to the right person or agency. All right, guys, let's get to it. Just some housekeeping stuff as we usually do. A big response, a giant response from our episode on Karen Reed last week, the update. And since that time, there's been some more developments. So last week, the week of April 4th, the Commonwealth filed a motion to restrict protesters from demonstrating outside the courthouse. They had originally proposed a 500-foot limit, which I think would send that probably, I don't know, a quarter mile outside of the courthouse, which I think would disrupt private property rights and other buildings near that complex. But Judge Canone had heard the motion and stated that 500 feet was too much, and she agreed to a 200-foot buffer zone for protest that's outside of the Karen Reed trial. The decision kind of struck me as kind of like what the Massachusetts state legislature does when they're trying to raise taxes. They'll float a trial balloon. We have to raise taxes 8%. And then the legislature comes back, no, that's crazy. We're only going to raise them 5. That's the game they play. And I think that's what the judge did in this case. So there is going to be a 200-foot zone, I guess, that protects the courthouse. And I think some of the rationale is the jurors seeing this on the way into the trial, which is slated to start on April 16th. I think this is going to be pushed back, but I don't know. I've been wrong before. So I just don't see how the Karen Reed trial can start when discovery, the obligation of the Commonwealth, hasn't been completed yet. You have what? 2 weeks. I don't want to get too much into Karen Reed this week, guys. I just don't see how you can go forward with a trial when the lead homicide investigator, Michael Proctor, has admitted in a federal grand jury to already lying in this case. And he's still on the job, although he is under IA investigation for the Mass State Police. According to Turtle Boy News, he had made an arrest, a murder arrest, in a Weymouth case that was mind-boggling. But Turtle Boy has photos, I believe, of Proctor getting into his vehicle at this crime scene. And I think in Turtle Boy's blog, he gets into it. Just check out TB Daily News. Throw that in the Google. You know, your family doesn't deserve a homicide investigator that's not under investigation for corruption. The victim's family doesn't deserve that. It's beyond me how this guy is still actually doing police work. And I wish somebody could explain it to me. And that kind of leads me to the next thing in this case. The online temperature for this case has just reached a boiling point on both sides, really. The pro-Commonwealth and the pro-Karen Reed sides. I see people battling at protests and stuff like that. And I'm just going to say for both sides, when you act like an ass, it defames whatever side you're on. You know, I see similar on Twitter. It is much more engaging on Twitter than it is on Facebook if you want to check some of this stuff out. But guys, I'm fact-based on this case as I am. I try to be in every other aspect in my life. You know, I see those taillights intact at 5 a.m. when they're supposed to be on the lawn at the crime scene. Nobody wants to explain on the Commonwealth side how that could be. Nobody's ever given an explanation that is even closely rational. So if we want to talk about this case, I will talk about it on a facts-based level. But all this stuff online just seems like poison. I avoid most of it, but holy cow, check it out. If you want to get a hold of me on the Karen Reed case or any other, really, email is the best platform. My email is barry@bostonconfidential.net. That's barry@bostonconfidential.net. I'm also a little more active on Twitter these days, guys. If you want to join me there, you can send me a message as well. And my handle on Twitter is @BCPBeantown. That's @BCPBeantown. I'm sure you could also just search for Boston Confidential Podcast in Twitter's search feature. All right, guys, let's get on to this week's case. This case, which I'm going to tell you about today, has kind of been overshadowed by the Karen Reed case in Massachusetts. First off, Karen Reed is just taking all the oxygen for true crime in New England since 2022, I guess. I think for a few reasons, really, because it's a supremely interesting case. And I don't know if my fellow Bostonians and my fans around the country realize this, but you're living in one of the biggest cases, the Karen Reed case. And I don't know, 25 years or so, I'd probably equate this case, the Karen Reed case, to the Klaus von Bülow case out of Newport, Rhode Island, back in the 80s. It is that mesmerizing for people. The only difference is really the media coverage. And I go back and forth on the media coverage of the Karen Reed case, and they just don't seem to exist. I don't think they have the personnel anymore. Go pick up a hard copy of the Boston Herald. There's nothing in it. There is no advertising. There's no news. So it's just a strange time for the news business, I guess. There is very limited coverage on that case compared to, like I said, the Newport case of Klaus von Bülow. It's not quite O.J. Simpson-like because you don't have that star factor, but we're living through a true crime moment here in Boston with the Karen Reed case. I hope people realize that, and I hope it's an impetus for change, quite frankly. All right, I'm shutting the door on Karen Reed. Sorry, Karen. So what I'm telling you about today, the arrests in this case happened on Valentine's Day of this year, February 14th, 2024. At the time, again, we were at the pinnacle so far of the Karen Reed case, so it kind of overshadowed everything. But it was released on Valentine's Day of this year that the Heath Street Gang, operating out of the Bromley Heath housing project in Jamaica Plain, had basically been dismantled by the FBI and its local partners, including the Boston Housing Authority Police, the Boston Police, and they had other federal investigators. This was a huge case. It wasn't really your typical street gang case in Boston. There was COVID fraud to the tune of $1 million, unemployment fraud. It's a super interesting case. And I bet the federal government, the FBI, is having a hard time writing down who's going to flip on whom in this case. Guys, this is a big case. It's a RICO case. And I don't know how difficult the FBI and the local cops had to work on this case, because they pulled a lot of information about what Heath Street was doing, right from videos that they made, rap videos, and these online, you know, disrespect sessions back and forth. During these videos and in the photographs I've seen, they're waving around what U.S. Attorney Josh Levy says is a modified 9mm handgun that gets modified into a machine gun, some type of clip on it or whatever. And these people were dangerous. There's, I believe, 3 murders involved in this RICO and several other shootings, one of which I think was the genesis of this investigation, involved a 9-year-old girl being shot at the Annunciation Street Project, which is right over the hill, Mission Hill, from Heath Street. And she was at a party and got shot, you know, in the crossfire. But there was 6 or 7 shots fired right next to this party. It was a party for an 18-year-old kid. And there are some problems with that party, and I'll tell you about them. But it wasn't the cause of the victim. She was purely an innocent victim in this case. So that was 2016 when that 9-year-old girl had gotten shot. And I think that's what sparked federal involvement. And the investigation, I don't know if it was super focused at that time, but as of Valentine's Day of this year, 40 arrests have been made. And they say over 24 of those are active and direct members of the Heath Street gang. And if you're thinking of gangs like you did when you were a kid, it's not like that. It's much more violent. And these Jamokes seem a little old for street gang life. Like, going through the arrest list, one guy's 35 years old. You're still in videos waving a gun around with your hat on backwards at age 35. But he was indicted, so I don't think you won't see him again until age 60. But you're 35 years old, you know, bumming around with 18, 19-year-old kids, shooting people who just live half a mile from your house, 9-year-old girls. And if you think they gave a crap about striking an innocent bystander, boy, girl, man, woman, they don't give a crap. They laugh about it. They sing songs about it. All right, guys, so this party that seemingly set off the investigation into this Heath Street gang, it was October 2016, and there was some type of party. It was actually a birthday party for an 18-year-old kid who lived in the Alice Taylor homes of the Mission Hill housing complex. Those are two large public housing projects, one called Mission Main and then the Alice Taylor Homes, which I think they used to call Mission Extension. And that's where the party was. And I remember when this happened because it was pretty big in the news. And the first thing I thought of when I heard this 9-year-old girl was shot was Tiffany Moore. If you remember that case, I believe that was my first podcast, the Tiffany Moore case, 1988. You know, it was like street crime mayhem in Boston at that time. And Tiffany Moore had come up from the Carolinas to visit family. And she was sitting on a mailbox playing with her cousins and other friends. And some gangbangers came by and had a bit of a shootout. And everybody scatters except for Tiffany. She's struck in the head and killed. And at that time, man, the city went nuts over that case. There were black city councilors petitioning for the National Guard to patrol Roxbury and Dorchester at that time. It was wild. But it did kind of focus the city on the growing gang problem. For years, Boston, the Boston police, had denied there were organized gangs. And after Tiffany Moore, that ended. And it kind of reminded me of that situation. This girl hasn't been identified in any publications because she's so young, and she survived. I think it was kind of a superficial wound, but they had let off about 6 shots during this episode at Annunciation Road in 2016. Very easily could have been a similar situation. But as I read that story, and I'm going to put it in the show notes, guys, about this party, 5 paragraphs in, it says the kids at the party took their cake and went over to a playground, which was right in the courtyard, I guess, at 1 a.m. You have a 9-year-old girl out in the city of Boston at 1 a.m., I'm sorry, I've had 3 kids, guys, and you know how many times they've been out of bed at 1 a.m. on any night ever? Never. And it's being portrayed as these people can't live a normal life. That's not normal to have a 9-year-old girl out at 1 a.m. in Roxbury. I'm sorry, it's a high crime area. So the parents of that girl are not responsible for the shooting. But come on, you got to let light dawn on Marblehead there and face reality. Because you want to know who else is up at 1 a.m. in the city of Boston? People up to no good. Absolutely no good. And you're in a housing project. I mean, let's get some common sense. I wouldn't have my kids on the beach at Cape Cod at 1 a.m. Never mind in the courtyard of a housing project where there's shootings very frequently. Let's get real here. But I think this birthday party shooting was the impetus for looking at Heat Street. And it's obviously taken quite some time, but that's on the list of these RICO offenses, is that specific shooting on Annunciation Road. And thank God she'll get justice. That little girl will get justice. One of the great things about RICO cases, guys, is it kind of dissolves the statute of limitations, right? Typically in criminal cases, you have a 7-year look back, but when that expires, you're home free. In this case, not so much, because that act is contributing to the criminal organization. Just because a bystander was struck, that doesn't really affect it. You were still trying to do the organization's business on that day in 2016 on Annunciation Road. It just gets added to the list. So that's great for governments and citizens. I guess not so much for the defendant, right? Because if you do one act, I think there's a couple acts you have to do in furtherance of the organization, but it's kind of a low barrier. And the top people here with Heat Street, I think they're going to be flipping over as much as they can, as quickly as they can. But some of those guys are not going to be able to avoid nearly life in prison because it was weapons involved, drugs. A lot of drugs, 3 murders, this shooting on Annunciation Road. You know what, guys? Let me give you a 10,000-foot overview of Jamaica Plain and Roxbury, where these shootings occurred. That's where Heath Street is their home. It's the Bromley Heath Housing Projects. It goes by another name now, but that's how everybody still knows this housing project. And it's always been plagued with what comes from poverty, drugs, guns, and gangs. The Heat Street Gang has been around since, that I know of personally, since the 1990s. I'm sure their members come and go in the usual fashion, jail and pushing up daisies. These urban street gangs, all of them within the city of Boston, and I'm sure within every city in America, thank God they're not super smart, because they're bragging online while they're flashing guns around, sometimes about the acts they've just committed, sometimes naming victims. And within this trial, they've been indicted and arrested. Now they're getting ready for trial. They'll be playing those rap songs they made up and the videos they made where there's money on the bed, they're dancing around with handguns. I mean, you're not the smartest criminal if you do that, right? Why would you take a video of yourself with a handgun in case a jury sees it? You say, I never carry guns. Oh, yeah, that I was just dancing around at that point with my friends. It's kind of harmless. It's a little club we have. It's just stupid. All right, guys, let me give you a little bit overview of these neighborhoods. Jamaica Plain, where the Heath Street project is, you know, Heath Street, it's a sprawling brick, or at least it used to be brick, housing project, old style, and it's never been problem-free. It's never been a good place to live. It's someplace you always would be looking to leave, quite frankly. When you just get out of the Bromley Heath housing project, it improves pretty well and pretty fast. And Jamaica Plain is kind of a high-priced neighborhood, and it has a reputation of being politically liberal. It's kind of like a little Cambridge, if you will, Jamaica Plain. And where Heath Street Project is, it's just a few blocks from the Mission Hill Project, right over literally Mission Hill. And if you don't know where Mission Hill is, it's where the Brigham and Women's Hospital is in that neighborhood there. So you go over the hill, and there's another even larger sprawling housing development, public housing development called Mission Main. And just across the street from that is the housing project on Annunciation Road. And that's where the shooting happened. And what the indictment reads is, on October 9th, 2016, Michael Riley, age 46, of Malden, Massachusetts, which is a leafy suburb of Boston, and Dominique Finch, 34, were driving by the Annunciation Road area where that 9-year-old girl was playing. And they were having a beef with the Mission Hill gang out of Mission, Maine. And they spotted some members of the Mission Hill gang. And I'm talking, this guy's is within blocks, I don't know, less than a half a mile from Bromley Heath to Mission Hill. And you're just blasting people that you're going to run into over and over again. And they're going to do the same thing to you. So that's why you have to take down these organized gangs like this. And this took so very long, but that's the government for you. Again, in the vein of not being very smart criminals, Dominique Finch, age 34, was on release with an ankle bracelet, a GPS ankle bracelet. And they have him driving in a white sedan, which was reported to the police later, after the shooting, and they just recover Finch's GPS ankle bracelet, and it shows him right there at the time of the shooting. You're doing shootings with an ankle bracelet on, guys. Holy cow. Thank God for stupidity. And this guy, age 34, in and out of prison, I don't know what his last beef was, why he had an ankle bracelet on. Thank God he did, though. The guys at the probation office, besides this girl getting shot, caught in the crossfire, I mean, I guess your product worked, right? Probation worked in this case because it got an attempted murderer off the street. And this guy Finch, in and out of jail, professional criminal, he was trying to do a homicide. He just failed. He's a failure. And this fool did it with an ankle bracelet on. And they say Michael Riley, age 46. I mean, this guy should be approaching retirement from the gang at this point. Is there no retirement package? He's going to be pushing 50 soon. Both of these guys will end up doing about 30 years from this case, but they deserve it. And half of it is from being stupid. So they did the shooting, and I don't mean to laugh. You got to pull some humor out of this somewhere. But these two had gotten out of that white sedan. They had fired at members of the Mission Hill gang, and that's what struck the 9-year-old girl. And they got back into the white sedan. A gun was recovered from Michael Riley's girlfriend, and Dominique Finch's gun was later recovered from another gang member. And again, Dominique Finch had a GPS on. So the Heath Street Gang, guys, I guess they call themselves the Heat, like after the Miami Heat. They might want to call themselves the gang that couldn't shoot straight, because on January 6, 2021, 5 years after the 2016 shooting of the 9-year-old girl in the Mission Hill housing project, a Heath Street associate of the gang, identified only as LN in the indictment, was shot and killed, apparently in error. It says by accident, but I don't think it's an accident when you discharge a weapon. It's an error because the wrong target was hit. But this LN and another person each took a gun to confront and ambush a member of the Mission Hill gang. And on this winter's day, LN somehow got shot, apparently by his partner, and killed. About a month later, that same handgun that was used to kill LN was found in the possession of another certified Heat Street gang member. This is one of the counts in the RICO charged against all these lunatics. January 6, 2021. Not a great day for LN. You were trying to get on with the big boys, and your partner shot you to death before you could even be made. All right, guys, the next one is July 2021. A juvenile member of the Heath Street gang, allegedly, and this is all alleged, nothing's been proven yet, but the feds have put the bracelets on people. This juvenile was driven to the Mission Hill housing project by Devon McDonald Jones, age 27, of Roslindale, Massachusetts. He drove the juvenile member of Heath Street. He knew he was carrying a gun. And then Devon McDonald Jones waited nearby from an area where he could see the shooting. And the juvenile did, in fact, kill this person identified in the affidavit only as FB. So the juvenile does the homicide, and other members of Heat Street drove him from that area to Quincy, Massachusetts. This Devon McDonald Jones is covered under this indictment and was arrested on February 14th, 2024. Do you think the juvenile in that case will turn state's evidence? I think he will pretty quickly if he's got a decent attorney, because he could probably get out from under that without much time served, if any. If he can provide that homicide in this case, that juvenile is going to walk. But you see these repeat players, they're always arrested. They're in and out of jail, in and out of the hospital. Today they're a perpetrator, tomorrow they're a victim, because the Mission Hill gang is going to have to get back, and then they're going to start blowing shots off at Devon, right? And who's around Devon? Maybe another 9-year-old girl, maybe another Tiffany Moore. They don't give a shit. We need more of these big RICO cases, but also what you need in these neighborhoods after these big raids happen, you have to go after these quality of life issues and lock these gang members up in the project for drinking in public, you know, smoking marijuana in public. Put the handcuffs on them, because they'll be driven out of the area and they'll stop packing guns on them on an everyday basis. I mean, the guns may be nearby, but you got to have an aggressive law enforcement strategy, because look how many shootings this gang was involved with. It's just a few people in each neighborhood, right? Repeat offenders. That's how you combat this. If you really want to combat it, you just arrest and imprison repeat offenders. If you're not getting the message, you can't give them all these chances. They got to go to jail for extended periods. And indictments like this one handed down in February do just that. You just can't tolerate this level of law breaking, and it ruins these places for everybody else who, again, already have it hard enough. But that's not the end of the Heat Street gang. They had started a cleaning company. Members of the Heat Street gang had started a legitimate, at least on paper, cleaning company. And when the pandemic hit, they all filed COVID claims, several COVID claims. And when the bailout act there, what's the name of it? The CARES Act came out, where, you know, all you had to say is your business was shut down due to COVID. 23 members of the Heat Street gang claimed unemployment through Joe Biden's CARES Act. And it was just like a blank check. And they stole $917,000, of which they used to buy over 100 illegal handguns, which they used to expand their gang. Your taxpayer dollars, guys, paid for these gangbangers' guns. I'm going to put some photographs in the show notes, and they're waving those guns around, singing and dancing, and you paid for them. How do you feel about that? Also within this indictment, guys, it seems like the Heath Street gang was running drugs directly to Maine. Four people with Maine addresses were identified in this. I'm sure the Maine authorities are looking into that on the state level. It's also said Heath Street had expanded into Brockton, Mass., and there a big presence at Brockton High School, which is undergoing some hellacious violence among the students. It's totally out of control. It's everything that's wrong with American education. And they say that there is a presence by Heath Street in Brockton. And as you have noted, I'm sure by now, they're a bunch of violent bastards. Also, guys, they were running an organized retail theft ring. And they'd target high-end stores, Nordstrom's and the like, in both Massachusetts and New Hampshire. And they would have juvenile members of the gang and basically gang associates go in, and you've seen them on TV. They're all basically the same. They grab racks of clothing. In this specific indictment, they chose Sunglass Hut, Nordstrom's, high-end stuff where they could grab a lot and hit the door. And as the security guards tried to stop them, they'd just say, hey, I'm with Heath Street. If you put your hands on me, I'm going to come back and kill you. Are you going to risk that for what? Minimum wage? And also, these security guards are told by the companies, don't try to stop people. So they just walk out with them. And that was the ring Heath Street was running, and mostly through juveniles. And that's also listed in this indictment. So there are a lot of counts. There are a lot of RICO counts against these guys. I mentioned some of their names earlier. Those guys seem to be big players in this indictment. There's also a guy by the name of Chikari Lyons, and there's a photograph of him with one of those modified Glock 9s, and the modification is to make it fully automatic. I don't know if they recovered this gun, but I mean, you're in pitches with these weapons for no reason. What good is that to anybody but the police? But what they did, they produced music videos, and during one of these videos, guys, these geniuses basically, they brag about what they do. They say, I could name the victims, but that might bring the feds to us. And the feds took that as a challenge because the assistant district attorney in charge of Massachusetts stated it in his address announcing the arrests of these guys. Also, I'll put that in the show notes as well. Just so dumb. So very, very dumb. They posted this stuff on the internet, the open internet, where they would brag about homicides, challenge the other side. And man, it was just so openly dumb. It's a head scratcher, really. I don't think I mentioned during those fraudulent COVID claims, the 23 fraudulent claims, they used their own identifying information. Name, social security number, knowing eventually they were going to get caught, but they probably thought, oh, we'll be rolled up as a misdemeanor. But again, that's federal money. That's a federal offense. And here they are. If I could interview one of those guys, do they realize how stupid it was to put all of this stuff on the internet and to use your own name to rob the federal government of almost $1 million, by the way? Like they weren't going to come for you eventually. I've been waiting for an update on this case to see how many people have flipped. They're going to flip, and they're going to flip quickly. So good work by the federal government on this. The Mass State Police and the Boston Police need to stay in there. Typically, they disappear after these big raids, the big headlines, you know. That's what's allowed gangs like Heath Street, Intervale Street to flourish, because attention goes away and people take their place. All right, guys, I think that's all I have for you here on Heath Street. Definitely not the brightest bunch. Hopefully this dismantles this gang permanently. But all right, guys, I'll leave you there. If you need to get a hold of me, please reach out at Barry@BostonConfidential.net. Otherwise, I'll see you on the flip side. You dig?